We're talking with Michael Wolff via FaceTime, and his new recording is called Swirl. And I got to tell you, I just love it. I love every note on it. I hope you like it this much.
I do. I'm really proud of this CD, man. This music. I really, I feel, you know, when you're playing music and you're writing music, it isn't all conscious. Some of it just comes out, and I'm really happy with what came out. I think it expressed where I'm at now as a person, as a musician. And it's, you know, nothing's ever perfect, but I'm not perfect, you know? So I just feel great about the feeling that's on every song. I wanted every song to have a feeling.
One of my favorite tracks is the title track, Swirl. Can you tell us the implications of the title Swirl and how that one came about?
Well, that came about, I was in the midst of a real health issue that I was having, very sick, had actually gotten myself a new piano. And I thought, I got to get myself something to look forward to pull me through this really bad cancer that I had, which was supposedly untreatable. But luckily, I found a great doctor at Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital who figured it out. And so I would get up every day. I could barely get out of bed, but I'd get up and go play that piano. And I was just thinking about life swirling around me. And it just, you know, as I said, it's not always, it wasn't a conscious musical idea or anything. It wasn't like sometimes I would have an idea to do a piece of music based on a certain chord structure or something. It was more of an emotional thing. And I just played what I was feeling, you know, I just played the feeling and composed the feeling. And it really came out pretty quickly. I didn't have to work too hard on it.
In the liner notes, you talk about, and I would just love you just actually just retell the story about that you were actually in the hospital and there was a DNR discussion coming up while you were there.
I was told I was in the ICU, and you know, I had basically died one night. I was, you know, had gotten sepsis and pneumonia from all these treatments, and I was in emergency room. I didn't remember the whole night, and then that I was just, they kept me really knocked out for about 3 days. And at one point, my wife was in the room, and the doctor said, "Do you have a DNR?" Which means do not resuscitate. And she goes, "What's a DNR?" And I sat up and said, "Resuscitate me." Because I had seen through the glass, you know, you're in a glass thing, and I'd seen all these people with all these tubes inside them and stuff. I said, "Well, if they're going to get a chance, I want to get a chance." You know, luckily, I didn't have to have any of those tubes. I did okay. But in retrospect, when I think about that story and I think about that experience, I just wasn't ready to check out. You know?
Well, I feel it in this record, you know, that seems to be this interesting mix of sort of the celebration of being alive, but also like sort of the awareness of the impermanence of it all.
Yeah, definitely that whole experience. And now I'm really healthy and everything, but that whole experience was about a 3 or 4 year experience. So it changed how I view everything. And I wanted to make sure that everything on this album had a mood and that there was beauty in all of it. You know, like I was saying, and I wrote this in the liner notes, that I was a really good friend with Bill Evans, and he used to talk about music as truth and beauty. And so I always think about those two things, like how can it be truthful? How can it be beautiful? You know, and of course, beautiful is subjective. I mean, it doesn't mean it has to be sappy or anything, but it has to be, just have some heart, man.
Indeed it does. And I got to tell you that we get a lot of jazz records in, which makes me really excited and encouraged that so many people are making so many great records, but we get more than we can listen to. And seeing your name on one always makes me go, okay, I'll check this out. But Ben Allison is another jazz musician that if I see his name on a record, I'm going to listen, because it seems like he's always playing with great folks.
He is a great musician. And I do one of his tunes, The Detective's Wife, and then we did one together that I named Allison. Yeah, he's he lived in my neighborhood. And when I was really ill, he would just come over and bring his bass, and I'd hobble to the piano and we would play. And we kind of developed a duo thing. And we started playing a lot of duo gigs. That's how I really kind of came up with this concept of how I wanted to do this music and have it be a little more intimate. And, you know, I mean, I've been playing a long time. I made a million records and stuff, but I just wanted a certain feel, and he was a big part of it.
It really works. It's a beautiful trio.
Yeah, and, you know, Ben Allison really is, he doesn't play bass like anybody else. He's super entertaining, you know. He's got his own style. When you watch him play, you go, what is this guy doing, you know? And he has his own sound, and I just love it. And then we were going to, we did about 6 months before we recorded this album, WBGO, called me. The people asked me to do a, they were doing a tribute to Errol Garner. And Kenny Werner was there, and Christian Sands, and Andy Mill, and a bunch of people were all doing this stuff. And so John Newcott, who's at WBGO and who actually produced my album, said, why don't you get a drummer? It'd be good for the Errol Garner stuff. And so I asked Ben, what do you think? Who would be good? And said, get Alan Bednard. I've been playing with this guy, and he's really great. And he's a young guy. He's fantastic. He really listens, you know, but he puts his own personality in his, into it. So when we're rehearsing, I'd have a song. I said, okay, give me a little Alan Bednard beat in there. You know, you come up with a beat. I'm not trying to tell you the beats. I'm telling you the feeling and what I want, but I want that Alan Bednard paintbrush on it, you know?
One of the most beautiful songs on there is Goodbye Too Late. What's the story behind that one?
Well, my father died many years ago, and he just dropped over. He had a heart attack, and so I didn't get to say goodbye to him. So I went away. He dropped over on December 7th. I was doing the Arsenio Hall show. It was a Monday. I flew up to the Bay Area. I was in L.A. where he was from, and, you know, dealt with all that and funeral and memorial. And the show was on hiatus. So I went on vacation with my now wife, Polly Draper, and we were in Hawaii. And I was really, really upset because I was very close to my father. And he was young. He's the same age I am now, 66, which is really a drag. So I just sat out, I looked at the ocean, and this thing came to me. I didn't have a piano there. I just wrote it down out of my head. This tune, Goodbye Too Late, because I didn't get to say goodbye to him.
Thank you.
Michael Wolfe, Goodbye Too Late. We're talking with him via the FaceTime app. And what a beautiful song that is.
A sad song, but then I came up with it in the key of A, which to me is a very bright key. I have synesthesia, so I have colors in my mind for days of the week, months of the year, numbers, and for keys, you know, notes and colors and stuff. I mean, and chords. So I put it in the key of A to kind of counterbalance that sadness of the song.
Have you talked to other musicians with synesthesia? How do you say it again?
Synesthesia.
Synesthesia.
Not really. I think I've met a few, but not many. But, you know, we always talk about color in terms of sound, chord colors, right? But for me, it's actual colors, you know.
What's B-flat?
It's just kind of bluish, gray, blue. A is red. A-flat is a darker red. G is kind of brown. G-flat is weirdly a taste. It's not a color. It's a taste on my tongue. It's a total tactile thing. It's a buzzy kind of taste. You know, F is just dark. Yeah, E is yellow. E-flat's a dark yellow. D and C are ivory colored. D-flat is nice and dark. So it goes between colors and feeling. It's really odd, but Wow. That's where I'm at.
You know, looking at the list of people you played with, it's actually kind of ridiculous because it's a list of some of the greatest American music. I'm not going to go through the list with you sitting here because you know it all, but I'm just going to pick out one name and just see what you say about them because they're one of my favorites. Cannonball Adderley, you played in his band. That's it. To me, that music is so just joyous and alive and fun. Was being in the band like that?
Yes. Every second. I had two idols growing up in terms of bands. It was Miles Davis and Cannonball. So I knew both of their music. And they had very different feeling, but there's a lot of similarities. With Cannonball, I had heard him in high school when I was about 16. He played the Greek Theater in Berkeley, California. I went with my girlfriend, my high school girlfriend, Michelle. And I said to her, one day I want to play with that guy. And she said, you will. And so when I got the gig at 22, we came back and we played the Greek Theater. And I was so proud. You know, same place. After the gig, I went backstage and I said, Cannonball, I'd like to get back with Michelle. He said, you're on your own, man. I can't do it. But no, it was joyous. He was so sweet, so soulful, very intellectual, you know. The whole band was great. Nat Adderley was really smart. He had a degree in sociology. Roy McCurdy had gone to Eastman School of Music. Walter Booker had gone to medical school, you know. It was a great band. The blues was at the bottom of everything we play, which I like to put in everything that I do. I like to feel the blues is in there somewhere, you know. But Cannonball was, when I first joined him after about two or three gigs, I said, hey, man, do you have any suggestions? He goes, man, I hired you because I love the way you play. You put new blood in the blood. So just play the way you play all over the piano and don't ever listen to anybody that tells you how to play. You just do what you do. Very, you know, great for a 22-year-old to hear that, you know. So he gave me a lot of confidence. And I loved that band. I loved hanging with them. It was great.
Your new record, Swirl, it does. There's a bit of the blues in it. There's a bit of traditional jazz in it. But it still sounds new to me. It still sounds fresh.
That's good.
How do you do that?
I have no idea. I just, you know, I'm where I'm at now. You know, I'm in the world. And I have a lot of feeling that I want to express. And I have all my experiences, well, all the people I've played with, you know. I play with a lot of people that aren't jazz musicians, and I've gotten a lot out of that. But, you know, the jazz musicians that I love, like Cannon and Sonny Rollins and Nancy Wilson, and, you know, so many people, Cal Jader. It's all inside me, you know. I took it all in. And yet, you know, my kids are young musicians. They're in their 20s, and I listen to all the stuff, you know, Vampire Weekend and, you know, Jay-Z and Kanye. I listen to everything, man. So I feel like, you know, it's all kind of in there, but I play it the way I play it, you know, so it just kind of comes out.
Well, I'm glad it does. Michael Wolfe, it's been a real honor to talk to you, and we look forward to whatever's coming next. If you ever come to Knoxville, come see us.
I will, man. I really appreciate you being interested in this record and liking it so much. It means a lot to me, man. This record, after what I've been through with my life and my health and trying to put everything into it, so I'm so pleased that you're into it, man.
Long may you run. All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
Yep, bye-bye.
It's great. Bye.
We talked via the FaceTime app on the iPhone. That was Michael Wolff. The new recording is called Swirl.